Alessandria Polizzi, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Alessandra.
Is the founder and CEO of Verdant Consultancy, and in her practice, she provides practical, simple, science-based skill building to help organizations manage conflict, deepen teamwork, and help leaders thrive. She offers programs for a wide clientele, including healthcare, education, nonprofit, banking, and startups. She's the author of the Workplace Mental Health Strategy Workbook. Alessandria, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. Okay, so welcome and thanks again for being here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for pulling this together.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's great. I'm meeting all these interesting people with great backgrounds who have devoted their careers to this issue. And so before we get into all of that, and we will, you kind of got into this because you're trying to help others avoid what you've experienced in your own kind of personal and professional life. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. So before I started my company, I was an HR executive, and I've been in HR for 20 years plus. Yeah, really focused on organizational development, leadership, executive development. So I've been at the front lines of seeing how people work, especially leaders and executives, and the stresses that can happen. I'm a change leader. I like to fix messes. I run towards chaos and try to make order out of it. And unfortunately, if you're one of those people, there's probably a reason why everybody else is running the other direction. Yeah. But me, I'm like, oh, just let me at it, right? So as a result of coming in and being that person, I've experienced bullying at nearly every role I've had. And my last role, unfortunately, it was my boss. And it caused me to ultimately burn out. And so when I burned out, I was really at one of my lowest points mentally. And I wanted to find better ways of working and navigating challenges, given that I'm so drawn toward fixing them. So I started doing research, scientific research, reading the studies that were available on workplace mental health, burnout, bullying, all of the things related to the humans behind the title. Yep. And that's what took me to start my company.
And can you tell me, if you don't mind, how the bullying that you saw and experienced manifested itself? What characteristics take? Because there's so many different.
Right. It's pretty textbook bullying. So rumor spreading, excluding people from meetings or information that they're supposed to have, gaslighting. You know, I once had a conversation with my boss in which I was making my business case that the scope I had taken on, which was bigger than what I was hired to do. I mean, I'm an executive, so that just comes with the territory. But what I said was, you know, this is one, not work I'm skilled at particularly or experienced. And two, it's more than I could handle. And by the end of the call, he had convinced himself that not only was I wrong, but I could actually take on more. So it's just like you can't get out of this pit, and things are, you know, really turned against you. I had a member of the board who really wanted me to do everything his way, and if you look at my behavioral profile, you'll see I'm not really good at being told what to do. nor do I embrace antiquated methodologies, like things that worked in the 90s don't necessarily work now. So it was just those types of things. And then the burnout it goes beyond just bullying. So with burnout, there are specific what are called hazards or psychosocial hazards in the workplace. And for me, it was values misalignment. And it was doing work that I didn't know how to do well most of the time, lack of role clarity and workload. So those things drove me to completely burnout by the time I left.
And so how did that affect you, the burnout, physically, emotionally, psychically, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, when I left, I ended up having to be partially hospitalized for my mental health. So It was during COVID, so I was able to do that program from home. But my mental and physical health were completely destroyed. And what I now know about burnout is it can take upwards of 2 years to recover. And I'm a high achiever. So for me, it took me being at the very end of my rope for me to decide that I needed help, that I couldn't somehow either figure use my IQ to get me through it or my stamina and resiliency to get me through it. I realized I was really fighting a big battle and I hadn't given myself enough self-compassion to say, you don't deserve to work this way. You don't deserve to live this way. And I had this, which is a very common mindset with high performers, which is if I'm kind to myself, I'll lose my edge. And so I just was really just like, you got to keep going. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, go, go, go. And now through all the research, I see that that's the antithesis of what you should be doing, but I didn't know any better.
Well, so much of what you're saying resonates with me. I was in television for 25 years, as mostly in the last 20 years, an executive producer, vice president of original programming. And over the years, and I had bullying almost throughout my television career, I experienced digestive problems, recurring nightmares about work, and even suicidal ideation. And so did you experience some of those things?
Oh, yeah. That was when I knew. Well, no, it's not when I knew it. Like, honestly, to be honest, it took me another year. But I had my first experience with suicidal ideation. Really? About 4 or 5 months into the role. But it was every night I was melting down. My blood pressure was through the roof. I ended up having to have surgery, a gallbladder surgery. There's physical manifestations of the impact that it has on you as well as psychological ones, surely. And of course, the three symptoms of burnout, because I had gotten all the way to burnout, are exhaustion, cynicism, and lowered cognitive ability or lower performance. And I had all of those in spades. So for sure.
And so I thought you said something about self-appreciation or self-love, something along those lines.
Self-compassion.
Self-compassion. Thank you. Perfect. And then, and I want to make sure I don't misperceive the notion then, but it seemed like you were indicating that you didn't handle this the right way.
No.
I want to hear a little bit more about that before we get into your work a little bit more. But my approach, if you don't mind me, my approach was, and I'd like to think of myself as a high performer. I mean, I had a high job, good salary, but it doesn't matter. In my view, this is happening to so many of us. It doesn't matter what color your skin is, gender, LGBTQI, socioeconomic status. And so I considered myself a well-paid, high performer. And yet when this was happening to me, it hurt my self-esteem so much, I blamed myself.
Of course.
And I just sat back down and said, I just got to work somehow harder and better.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
The behavioral change. So, you know, I've been through it and I'm learning, but I'd love to hear what you think about your own experience and what you've learned about these kinds of approaches or response.
Yeah. I'm going to mention at the end a handout that I'm going to provide, but part of it includes those early indicators that you may be heading toward burnout. One of them is I'll just work harder.
Yeah.
So in my research, there are three things that have been the most highly correlated to building resiliency and navigating difficult situations, be they bullying, burnout, whatever, high stress, whatever the situation is. The first one is self-compassion. And okay. So what the phrase was that I've seen is self-coaching instead of self-criticism. Yeah. Because high performers tend to beat ourselves up. We would never speak to somebody else the way we speak to ourselves, ever.
Yeah, I'm my worst bully. I've said that.
Internalize bullying, right? Like we become our bullies. Yeah. But the research shows that if instead I could practice self-coaching and self-compassion, the rest of the world can criticize. If we practice self-compassion, what is found is neurologically, it activates the parts of our brains that actually make us better able to navigate these situations and actually make us better able to make connection with other people. It actually activates the nurturing parts of our brains in addition to other parts. So, but so many people are like, I said, why would I be nice to myself? I have to hold a higher bar, right? And right. I've heard so many people say that.
Yeah. And your point is so well taken that if I internalized every criticism, and it wasn't just criticism, it was the lack of appreciation. Mm-hmm. Never even thank you for, in my world, you know, I was winning awards. I was creating shows that were making a lot of money, lots of viewers. I was not a perfect employee. I'm not sure how many people are. But we're also, I think, not talking about people that show up late, you know, are drunk, doing a horrible job. We're talking about people that are good employees, if not great employees, devoted, loyal, hardworking, and productive.
Which can be very threatening to other people.
Well, and I guess that, you know, and I wanted to believe they were threatened by me, but I didn't
have... It doesn't matter why.
Yeah.
Things happen. You know, what you mentioned about feeling valued is another one of those psychosocial hazards. So, and again, I'll share this with the participants, but...
Right. Wonderful.
Feeling valued, feeling like and appreciated, having authority or agency to make decisions over your job, knowing what you'll be measured against. These are some basic things that have been correlated to an increased risk of burnout when they don't exist.
Yeah. And I think it's true of almost all of us if we're those kinds of employees. And I'm interested in your experience personally and professionally, is that where else does somebody have so much power over you? And I've mentioned this in a couple of the other interviews I've done for the summit. I produced a television show with a sheriff down south, kind of almost central casting, tough southern sheriff who ran a jail. And he was, now he didn't mistreat anybody from what I saw, but he loved the idea of being tough, kind of bully sheriff. He regaled in it. Uh-huh. But other than if you've lost your freedom, and I don't make this comparison lightly, who has more control over your life as a grown adult than a boss? They control your self-esteem, your self-worth, your ability to pay your bills, the arc or lack thereof in your career, all these things. And so for me, it was very hard to fight back because I had too much to lose and I loved the work. And
yeah.
So I never really figured out the best approach, and the things that you're starting to talk about and that you're going to provide, I wish I would have had them 20 years ago.
I wish I would have had them, you know, as I was going through this. Well, yeah. I'll back up what you said with data. So UKG produced a study a couple of years ago that showed that our boss has the same impact on our mental health as our significant other.
Yes.
More than your doctor and more than your therapist.
Amazing. Well,
so, I mean, that just exists. And if we spend 80% of our time at work, to think that that's not going to impact our mental health is kind of delusional. And the belief that we can turn it off is not real. And one of the sayings that I like to use is that we are feeling creatures who also think.
Yeah.
We are not thinking creatures who sometimes feel, right?
Yeah.
Our emotions and our brains evolve to keep us safe. Our brains don't understand that the threat isn't to our life, but it's to our livelihood.
Yes.
Right. So our brain is reacting in the way that it was designed to do over 200,000 years, which is to try to protect us.
Yeah. It's that fight or flight. And we don't feel, at least many of us can't fly and we can't fight. So where does that leave us? So let me ask this.
It can manifest. So let me talk about flight for a second. So there's actually four. There's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Fawn is that, you know, how can I make this up to you? How can I get you to like me? Like,
yeah,
like a sycophant.
That
right?
Hurts, but it sounds a little bit, I mean, I don't think I was obsequious, but I just tried to find the appreciation and the love. So go ahead. This is really.
Yeah. So, I mean, guilty. I'm a flight mostly. So flight can manifest as perfectionism.
Yeah.
So if I just make no mistakes, right, then I will be left alone. I'll be protected. And
okay.
Here's the thing. Our brains have come up with these shortcuts to help us understand the world around us. And a thing to appreciate about our brains is that today we get as much information per day as we did in a lifetime 100 years ago. So our brains are doing their best to keep up. So shortcuts are everywhere. And there are over 200 documented unconscious biases, cognitive distortions, ways in which our brains misunderstand what's happening, misinterpret it, et cetera. And so perfectionism is one that's extremely common. And especially for high performers where we're like, I can't make a mistake because if I do, the consequences are dire.
Yeah. Let me, it sounds like, and I never would have said this while I was in the midst of it. I've been learning and reading, talking to experts like yourself. This notion of trauma, that we've experienced trauma, I think is fair, that it's not hyperbole. And so given you're experiencing trauma, sounds like you did too. I've also seen this notion, which I'd like to get your views on, this notion of psychological safety at work. And I very rarely felt safe. Uh-huh. And I thought that if my ratings were great, if I won another award, if I made another $1 million for the company, I might feel safe. So can you get into a little bit of, in the work that you do, what is this notion of psychological safety and how can you get it? And what do you do if you don't have it or you don't feel it?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, that's, how much time do we have? So let me talk a little bit about trauma.
Okay.
So, when we talk about trauma, it's really about the impact. It is not whether or not you believe a thing is traumatic. It is the impact it has on our brain. So it's whether or not our brains, or we believe that we have the capability to cope, we have the resources to respond. So something that could be traumatic to one person may or may not be traumatic to another. I like to give this example. When I was about 7, I almost drowned in 2 feet of water. Mm-hmm. I stood up and I was fine, but I could have died, right? So that, you know, that's kind of like what is trauma? So it's very personal. 2 out of every 3 adults in the United States has had a traumatic childhood event. So that changes how our brains are wired while they're being developed. We bring that with us to work. So that it may be that someone can be, you know, aggressive or yell or throw stuff at one person and it brushes off of them. And you mentioned about different backgrounds. Depending on your background, that may activate you in a way that doesn't activate people. So I think that's something to consider. So psychological safety. Sorry, did you want to add?
Only, you know, it reminded me of something because I've done so much self-blame and I just kept at it. But there was a producer I worked with early in my career and he was like a tough Philadelphia guy. And when people came up to him, you know, in a bullying way early in his career, he wouldn't take it from anybody. And so to your point, some of us take this stuff so personally and don't have it within us to strike back. And some people, this criticism is like, oh, well, who cares? You know,
right. It's just a job.
Yeah. And so to your point, it is so interesting how some of us take this stuff in and kind of wear it like a cloak. Mm-hmm. And other people, it's like, yeah, so what? I'm doing the best I can or whatever. Right. So that was a really interesting point.
What's interesting about that is if you are a person, a highly empathetic person, you are more attractive to bullies anyway.
So, I think they can smell me, Alessandria. I think the, you know, with each new job, they could smell that I was just going to go back to my desk, you know, because I do think to a fault, I'm one of those empaths. And that didn't always, I think it was great for my staff because I made sure to treat them well, but I'm not sure that that always served me well in these kind of tough, stressful environments.
Yeah, here's how it served you. You're not in them anymore.
Yeah, right.
So, there you go. Now, was it a rough road to get there? Sure. Would it have been great if both you and I had different skills that we learned growing up so we didn't have to go through the garbage to get to where we are? Absolutely. And that's what my company focuses on doing is helping people learn those skills. But let me go back to psychological safety.
Yeah, so tell us how you and your consulting firm help in those environments.
Well, which environments?
In one that's not psychologically safe for people.
Oh, yeah. Not, most organizations aren't, and it's something you have to maintain. So just real quickly, because I see it get used and misused a bunch of different places.
Okay.
So psychological safety is about the belief that I can make mistakes, I can take risks, I can ask questions without it having a negative impact on my career or me as a person. So highly psychologically safe organizations, they debate and they discuss the undiscussable, but it's about the ideas and not about the person. So it doesn't undermine the relationship or the belief that that other person is valuable, et cetera. There's also psychological health and safety, which is more of what we were talking about, which is how do we create workplaces? And that's something that's happening globally. How do we create workplaces that can foster the kind of healthy performance that we're talking about and discourage things like bullying and other toxic behaviors?
And so let me jump in and ask you, so why is it so prevalent when it would seem somewhat obvious in a way that you want to treat people well because you don't want them ruminating, as I might, or being hyper-vigilant, waiting for somebody to tap them on the shoulder with a criticism or an email, oh my gosh, what now? What do you see in terms of productivity, in terms of these psychologically unsafe places and ones that you may be working on to turn around? What's the difference in terms of the data you have or the anecdotal evidence you have that it's a lot better to treat people the right way than it is to create, you know, an unsafe environment psychologically?
I mean, we could spend the rest of our time talking about the data on this, but let me give you some simple ones.
Right.
High stress workplaces are 1.5 times more likely to go bankrupt, period.
Yeah.
There is not one research study that shows that having unhealthy or high stressed people gives you better outcomes. Not one. You may have anecdotal evidence of maybe one time when that worked, but it's not sustainable, and nor does it not have negative impact on the people participating. There's no research that supports, unfortunately, the behavior that we see, which is pretty toxic. So what I don't understand is why we're still stuck in this old school, unproductive way of working. And it kind of reminds me of parenting, you know? So I was raised in the 70s. I got spanked. But we know from research, was that helpful? Absolutely not. But anecdotal evidence that says, oh yeah, my dad beat the crap out of me and I never did that again. But we also know that that's not healthy. And so there's so many other behaviors that we're learning as we learn more about the brain and how we work that they're just better.
I love this issue because several things. One is I never worked really, even though I went back to my desk to try to work harder and better, I never worked better because the boss was being, let's even call it mean-spirited, to be euphemistic about it. And I'm also, by the way, I don't want to be melodramatic here. Nobody ever threw a stapler at my head. I wasn't, you know, gushing blood. And I certainly wasn't sexually harassed. And I probably at this point in the conversation should acknowledge my privilege, right? I had lots of advantages, but that didn't keep me from being bullied. And but I would have run through a wall for somebody. And I had a couple bosses that only lasted a year. They both got fired, or one left, one got fired.
Well, that tells you so much.
Yeah. Two years out of 25, I would say, where I had a boss who treated me like a valued employee and, you know, I don't know about a friend, but just somebody, I knew they had my back. That was it. I knew I didn't have to look over my shoulder all the time. And I would have done anything for those two people. I worked so hard for the ones that weren't appreciative, but I wasn't loyal to them. I didn't feel have an affinity for them. And what I would say about the spanking thing, not an expert, not a researcher. Okay, and not an academician, but I will say this. I was a boss for much of my career as an executive producer. When I was at the Wall Street Journal, I had staffs all over the world, Hong Kong, London, San Francisco, D.C., New York. The only times, both at the Journal and throughout the rest of my career, when I lost my temper, I was not a perfect boss either, is when things were going poorly for me. When I was fearful, when I was agitated, it really, but I checked with people. I said, oh my gosh, I might've been a bully boss. it only happened a few times. I would apologize. I'd be thinking about it when I went home. So I was told I wasn't a bully boss, but I also wasn't a perfect boss. So it's really more about them, but they don't seem to have any empathy.
Well, we don't know that. Right? Yeah. No, look, only 2%, I think, of the population has like narcissism and the kinds of dark triad. Most people are, this is all they know. They don't know how to do it differently. I know that some people who have worked for me would call me a terrible boss. I've been called a micromanager, which I'm not attentive to enough details to actually be a micromanager, but that's their experience of me.
Yeah.
And here's the thing we don't talk about is the emotional weight of being a manager.
Yeah.
Because research shows that it is lonely. You have imposter syndrome. You have to mask. There's pressure of everybody looking at you. And so what we see is that mental health actually decreases the higher up you go in the organization. So we don't tell leaders about, one, those risks, nor do we equip them with the skills for them to be healthy. And think about this, right? Unhealthy leader, like you just said, I yelled when I wasn't feeling great. Yeah. So if I'm not feeling great most of the time and I don't know how to navigate that, what do they say? It rolls downhill.
I tried not to have that happen too often, but I have to acknowledge that did happen over the years.
You're a human.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
You're going to make mistakes.
Yeah, but that's not the kind of bullying I experienced. I experienced bullying, you know, consistently, as many as you did too. So let me ask about this. Perhaps on a positive note, in the few minutes we have left, I know you focus on and you work on resiliency. And if I can say anything about myself, despite how I maybe didn't handle things the right way, self-blame, all these things, I was resilient. And I'm very proud of that aspect of my career. I stuck with it. I got new jobs. I kept trying. Tell me about your, you know, sense of the import of resiliency and how that plays into your work.
Yeah, I mean, if I could replace the word resiliency with coping skills, I would. But it really falls under the umbrella of, look, we are all resilient. We got to where we are through hard work, through being able to bounce back from challenges. Sometimes it would be great if they didn't hurt as much, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it would be great if we didn't get as many scars and damage as much. Yeah. And so things like, you know, removing the word should from your vocabulary when it comes to especially your internal talk, practicing self-compassion, practicing acceptance. One of the things we just talked about, right? Accept that I'm a manager and I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to jack it up, right? And so that's okay. I learn, I do better. So there are just simple things that we can learn that can help us navigate these difficult situations more in a more healthy way, that for many of us, we've never been taught these skills, right? Yeah. We've just been told, just work harder, push yourself, you know, all of the catchphrases that lead us towards burnout. So when we can have these skills, it's not about that we're missing resiliency. It's we're bolstering our ability to cope and bounce back without having to be so damaged in the along the way.
Yeah. And it's also this notion, I think many of us, I certainly did, grew up, you know, with this notion of kind of do unto others, that, you know, in school, be good to your teachers, do your homework, smile, you know, work hard, work well, and it'll come back to you. And I think that that's a naive approach in the workplace. And
well, it depends.
Yeah.
So one of the things that that research shows and that we teach people about is understanding your purpose. So Andy, if you really are in your role because you want to help people achieve what they want to achieve or learn what they want to learn, whatever your purpose is, what is my purpose? When I reconnect to my purpose, my values, I am better able to navigate when I'm in challenging situations. So you could say, I want to be that guy. So I'm going to be that guy. And then you make decisions accordingly.
Yeah. No, it's great advice and great, just wonderful information. This was so interesting and helpful to me. And I know everybody watching and hearing this will get great value out of your insights, Alessandria. So thank you for that.
Thanks for having me.
Just really great. So you mentioned a couple times earlier, and I want to make sure that we come through on this. You have something to offer to the viewers and something that I'm also very interested in my hands on. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So it's a quick sheet that talks about, I've got 20 different things you can try when you are finding yourself in challenging situations. So there's simple skills for coping in high stress situations. And then part of it will also include warning signs that you may be leaning towards or moving towards potential burnout. And so we'll have that in there as well.
And if people want to take advantage of that and your consulting practice, how can they most easily and best reach you?
Well, LinkedIn is always the best way. I love making new friends. So feel free to connect. I accept most connection requests. I'm happy to chat with people through that. That's the best way. And then, of course, you can always visit our website. We have a contact us part, and our website's verdantconsulting.net.
And I think the word verdant is perfect for the kind of work you're doing. I really do.
I think you're
clever and creative. Well, thank you. And final word from me, we call ourselves bully targets, but now let's aim to change the workplace for good. Well, thank you for watching and listening. Thank you, Alessandra.
Thanks.